Hi guys, welcome back to episode three. Welcome to episode three. I could go back and change that, but Jesus Christ, I just recorded a 10-minute intro without realizing that I didn't press the play button. So if I fuck this one up, you're just going to have to power through it or skip on ahead. Thanks for tuning in. Still getting used to hosting a podcast. It's kind of weird. I'm just sitting alone in my kitchen staring at my cat while my cat looks at me like, what the fuck are you doing, bro? Cats must think that human beings are fucking crazy, man. Do you mean like one minute I'm scooping shit out of our fucking little bucket, the next minute I'm just staring at her talking into a microphone for no reason, and she's just chilling like, chill the fuck out, man. And that's the point of the podcast today, talking about stress, anxiety, being present, just self-care, trying to feel better about yourself, be positive, try and make changes in your life. I should take some lessons from my cat, who's just chilling the fuck out, not a fucking care in the world, just sleeping, chilling, you know? That's a life. Unfortunately, that's not my life. And so here's the thing. If you've listened to the podcast before, I'm coming up almost 2 years of not drinking, and you know, a large part of my life, I haven't been present to my own life. I've been too busy, stuck in the past with all the past bullshit and dramas, or I'm too busy focused on trying to be something in the future that doesn't exist and not doing any work towards being that person. So getting like stressed out and anxious that I'm not actually doing the thing. And so I'm kind of like, it's honestly making me bonkers. And the thing about drinking is when you think like that, you can drink and then that release goes. You have a release to sort of let loose and not think about stuff. And when you don't drink and you don't have any vices like me, you don't have that release. So you're constantly in your own head. So this is a battle I'm having right now, trying to not overthink too much, not get too wrapped up in my own bullshit, not being too hard on myself, not like letting go of the past and sort of moving on and focusing on myself and bettering myself, but not concerning myself too much about a future that yet doesn't exist, but just trying to just focus in on the here and now to make a future that's going to be better for myself and be better and more calm in the present moment. And one thing I find really hard is when I'm hanging out with people and trying to, or even just on my own, when I'm trying to do something or I'm trying to listen or I'm trying to focus in, I'm just not present, man. You know, if I try and like write, the next thing I know, I'm thinking about something that doesn't even matter, or I'm on Facebook or I'm on Twitter. Next thing I know, 4 or 5 hours have gone by and I've done nothing. And I'm just like, what am I doing? You know, and like, with that moment when I am tuned in to being present, it's so great, man. There's nothing like it. And I don't know if you listened to episode 2, Leonard Chan talks about how he is now 90% present, he reckons, in his life. And that's amazing, man, because I don't think I've ever been more than about 10% present. You know, even as I'm trying to do this intro for the fucking 100th time, my mind is going all over the place and part of me is just like, concentrate, just fucking nail this intro. And it's hard because some part of me just is going to forget what the fuck I'm doing because I'm too busy thinking about, I mean, I don't even know if this is making sense right now, you know? So our guest today is Tracy Hamlin, stand-up comedian again from Toronto. She's great. She's been a friend of mine, a lot like Leonard, for the last couple of years. And she's been going through, you know, a rough time in her life where she's had to sort of like take a step back, look at what's going on, how she's got here, and how to deal with moving on from that in her life. And she's doing great with it. And that's what we talk about today. We talk a bit about mindfulness and meditation because she just recently completed a class in that. Self-help, self-care, how to do that, how not to be hard on yourself. And I think, like, honestly, man, like, I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but I feel like we're all a little too hard on ourselves. I'm so hard on myself. I feel like that's my worst quality, is being hard on myself. just being okay with yourself in the present moment and just trying to be the best version of yourself at all time. And if you fail, be okay with failing. And it's tough, man. You know, it's hard work, but it's good hard work. And I'm trying to get to a point in my life where I enjoy it because I avoid it. I avoid trying to deal with who I am probably all the time. And it's not healthy, you know. And I've done the hard thing of not drinking. That's so hard to do, right? I've done that. I've committed to 2 years right now. I'm committing to a lifetime of not drinking, but I've never done anything for 2 years. You know, I wouldn't even commit to a phone contract that was 12 months because I was like, that's too much of a commitment. And I'm in a good place now with booze. I don't drink. I don't even think about it. I don't want to do it. But I am committed to try and figure out who I am and what I'm all about. And I don't think, I mean, again, I can only speak for myself, but I'd never spent a lot of time trying to figure out who I am, what's my purpose, what are my goals, what do I want to pursue in life, what energy do I want to give out, who do I want to accept in my life, what am I willing to do, what am I unwilling to do. I feel like we all struggle from it, and I feel like a lot of people don't do it. I feel like we all medicate, drink drugs or whatever, or vices, to try and not think about it. But I think the people that are truly successful, people that are truly happy, the people that are truly at peace, and people that are truly present, are the people that have done the hard work. And, you know, I don't know if that, I mean, this is probably the most obvious thing, but the best things in life to do are probably the hardest things to do. The things that are the most worthwhile, figuring out who you are and being at peace with yourself, is so hard, and it's a lifetime practice. And that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm making a commitment to myself for my life. It gives me anxiety even thinking about it, but I can't avoid it any longer. And if you're going through the same thing, you can't avoid. And there's so much help out there, man. There's so many great books that I'm reading. And even when I'm not, you know, maybe having a bad day or whatever, today I'm not having a great day, but I just was like, no, I've got to do this podcast. I've got to do the intro. Even if I just do that, that's fine. You know, I'm trying to read some books about it. I'm trying to just be okay, man, because I feel like, you know, honestly, the more I overthink and I get to, I mean, I was having last week or two, God, just having the panic attack, what seemed like every day. And I'm like, okay, John, that's enough. But the thing is, when I'm like, why are you having these panic attacks? It's because I'm not doing the small things every day to take care of myself. I'm not eating well. I'm not exercising enough. I'm not meditating. I'm not being easy on myself. I'm not pursuing anything. I'm just sort of just getting up and being like, ugh, all right, let's get through another day sort of thing, which is not healthy to do. And I've just got to a point where I'm like, I can't do it anymore. So Tracy, I think Tracy is someone who's probably been in that situation. I feel like we all have been there somewhere, or you know someone that might have done. So I think this podcast is really interesting, really insightful conversation I had with Tracy. I hope you enjoy it. Please check out, follow Tracy on all the social medias, which I'll post. Check out our show, Love Is Everywhere. It's the third Sunday of every month at Comedy Bar. That's an awesome show. I think we talk about it in the podcast, but you should definitely check it out live. It's great. Tracy's great. This is a great podcast. Yeah, and please leave some feedback, because honestly, I don't know what the fuck, you know. I hope people are enjoying it, you know. And I'm going to continue to do it anyway, so cool. Well, thank you for listening to that, and please enjoy the conversation I just have with Tracy Hamlin. Tracy Hamlin, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Doing well. Good. Thank you. Thanks for being second guest on the podcast. Yes, it's
thank great. You for having me.
Yeah. All right. So, reason why we're in today is I've been thinking a lot about doing inner work on yourself. You know, stuff. You know, internal things with your mind, de-stressing, just not getting to, you know, like I've been suffering a lot from like panic attacks and overthinking and making myself go crazy. And I've been finding stuff like reading about meditation, mindfulness, doing yoga, all those kind of things kind of have been helping me really just try and be present and not to thinking too much about being in the future or living in the past. And in episode 2, we're actually talking to Leonard Chan about that. I mean, he was saying he was 90% present. Did you hear that episode?
Yeah.
90% present. That seems impossible. How, as you know, as you're a kind of person that tends to overthink and live too much vicariously in the past too, it's like 90% of your time you're in the present. Oh, I don't know. That seems like a lot.
No, maybe the reverse. Maybe
yeah, that's 10%. Why. Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought too. But yeah, so I mean, that's something that's been happening a lot for me is since trying to do it with like more work on myself and just really like, you know, try not to. Yeah, live too much in the past or the future. I've kind of just been freaking myself out unintentionally, drinking too much coffee, having an anxiety attack, having a panic attack, not being able to calm and just relax. And like, even some of my friends are like, you always look stressed. And I don't think I do, but then I realize I'm like, yeah, I'm probably always a little stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you recently did some mindfulness classes because for similar sort of reasons. So I'm interested to hear a bit about that. And do you relate to what I'm talking about? The overthinking and the living in a time that doesn't even exist. Okay, let's just start off by percentage wise, how much would you say you live in the present moment? Leonard Chan set the bar pretty high. I don't think anyone's going to beat that, to be honest. I think that's a record.
Reasonably, I would say on an average, maybe 30-40%.
Wow, that's still pretty high too.
But that's recent.
That's recent.
That's like with having that's done with the mindfulness class and things like that.
So let's go back before the mindfulness classes. Mm-hmm. How did this come about? Like, what's been going on? Where did you find out about this class? Why did you think you need to do it? And yeah, let's see.
Well, I went through a period this year where my whole life got kind of dismantled all at once.
Yeah.
So that left me kind of floating in the ether for a while. I had to leave my apartment and my job and was just feeling very displaced from everything.
Right.
And so looking at the present at that point was very frightening because there was no stability. Nothing was anchored yet. I didn't have a place to work. I didn't have anything filling my time. I had taken a break from stand-up for a few months as well. So even that, which I usually had always been able to point my focus at, didn't have comedy. So I was just kind of lost and didn't really have anything to tie myself to at the time.
You had so basically your whole life, sort of everything consistent in your life just went away at the same time. You had, you were working in the same job
for three years,
your relationship for about the same amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've been doing stand-up probably, I would say.
I've met 4 years now.
4 years. So basically your everything that was going on in your life at the same one time just went away.
Yeah.
And then you're left there going, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Was it a case of like, were you, I mean, I guess it was, I mean, much needed change, but were you just like, because I've talked in my first episode about trying to find out like, the fuck am I and what do I like and what am I doing outside of, you know, what I've been doing before that? Were you kind of in the same place when everything sort of just went away? where was your head? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. Mostly trying to kind of, in a similar thing to what you were talking about, solve myself as a puzzle. Like trying to figure out why I repeat the same patterns and where those come from. And so giving myself like hard and fast rules about things in my life. I don't know like how specific to get with it, but I started making myself pay attention in moments that I normally would have found some kind of distraction for.
So I can give me an example of that.
So like, I hadn't labeled it this at the time, but it would have been a mindfulness thing,
right?
Of like, if I'm feeling discomfort, if I'm feeling anxiety, there are ways that I would usually quiet that,
right?
Whatever distraction it is, whether it's like focusing on comedy or eating food,
right?
To like binge eating food or whatever it is. And I just made myself not do any of those things and just sit in the discomfort and feel whatever unpleasant feeling I was feeling.
Oh, wow.
At the time, and force myself to do this quite often.
When everything just went away?
Yes.
How was that?
Really eye-opening, actually, and realizing that I didn't have any internal ways of comforting myself or soothing myself when things felt unpleasant. That I had always needed outside things to quiet feelings of anxiety or discomfort, that I had never been able to sort them out myself.
Right. So in terms of like, if say you're having a bad day, instead of just like sitting back and being like, okay, I'm having a bad day. Why am I having a bad day? Feeling it out and kind of like working on the inner parts of you. You're just like, hey, I'll go to school, get a milkshake and a burger, and just
whatever,
hopefully
it'll
distract me from the feeling.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's a short-term reward, but the long-term thing is still there.
That I what you were saying about like, I don't know what I like, I don't know what I do. It was that. It was that I realized that, yeah, I have no idea what comforts me or what works for me or what actually makes me happy.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that sometimes it takes that sort of rock bottom where you're just like, okay, right, I'm here. Where do I go from now? And like,
yeah.
I guess that's a kind of terrifying place to be. I can relate to a lot. But when that happened to you, what did you do? Like, what did you just like? Were you having panic attacks? Were you having anxiety attacks? Were you like freaking out, or were you trying hard to not let that happen? What were you trying to?
No, like, I kind of made myself feel my feelings, which I am not good at a lot of the time. I am very good at pretending that everything's fine. That's just kind of how I was raised. Is like everything is chaos, and we don't acknowledge any of it.
Yeah.
Everything is fine all the time, even though it's very clearly, objectively not fine at all.
Right.
So this was the first time probably in my whole life that I'd really given myself permission to not be okay. And to be like, not exactly public about it, but much more public about it than I would have ever let myself be in the past. So letting people know and sharing with people, even my friends and stuff like that, that I'm not feeling well, which I know that sounds obvious to like tell your friends when you're not doing well, but that is not an obvious thing for me.
How did you feel with doing that? Because I know what you're saying, because it feels now that you do it obvious, but it's not always the case. Because when I stopped drinking, I was at a point where I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know who to talk to. I feel a lot of shame, guilt, anxiety about it. I was raised really not to talk, everything's fine, but it's not that kind of same environment. And I just had to just tell people. And I did the bigger thing of just putting on Facebook and just being like, let the world, because I just didn't know where to run. And but that in itself was probably one of the best things I've ever done, because you spend your whole life just emotionally, internally, just like kind of repressed, and nothing ever gets better. But then I found, and I don't know what your experience was, but I found that once I put that out there, all of a sudden you realize, how many amazing people you have in the world.
Yes.
How great people are, even strangers, and also how okay it is to just be not okay.
Yeah.
And how okay it is for your life to be a little messy, because it's very usual, and it's also people relate very heavily to it because not enough people are doing it.
People don't talk about things, and life is messy. And people, what I realized is people will step up. Like, I needed a lot of help in, like, those couple of months when everything got turned upside down. My stuff was split between three different people's apartments. My one friend was taking care of my dog, and another friend was letting me crash on her floor for a month and a half. Like, I needed a lot of help and a lot of support.
Yeah, that's hard to ask for.
It's very hard to ask for, especially when you're taught to never ask for anything and pretend that everything is fine.
Yeah, and you have to also tell people what's going on, which sometimes can be hard because you feel the shame, even though a lot of it, what's going on, isn't even your fault.
Yes.
What did you find in terms of your friends, like people being good with that? Like, when you reached out, you put it out publicly to your friends? Did you post it anywhere, or did you just sort of tell people that were in your close circle?
Well, I was in a unique situation where, like, the relationship that I left, we worked together as well. So I had been working there for 3 years, and he had been working there for, I think, 5 or 6 years. So, and there was also a very large staff I think we'd have like 150 people working there. So everybody knew everything. It's like working at a high school.
Yeah.
So it was very public there. I posted in a Facebook group asking for help when I needed to emergency move out of the apartment. So I had to like pack and move all of my stuff in like 12 hours.
How hard was it for you to do that?
Like,
did you want to do that, or did you just like, I have no choice?
I had no choice.
And you
did it? Was I don't want to vent too much of stuff publicly, but I had ended the relationship and then come back to do some packing the next day. And as I was going through things, kept finding things that had been like fucked with in some way. And it was finding a carton of milk in one of the boxes that I had packed.
Right.
That was mostly confusing.
Yes.
Confusing. And then when I realized, oh, this was meant to like make this box smell bad.
Oh God. Yeah.
This was supposed to be like, and then finding out that was plan B, and that plan A had been to put fish in there.
Oh, wow.
From the freezer, and that they just thought better of that, realizing like, oh, I got to get everything that I care about out of here, or I don't know what's going to happen.
So you were like, okay, I have no other choice. You publicly posted stuff. And how was the response? Was that just like right away?
Immediately.
Yeah.
Like so much support.
Yeah.
And so many good people, and people who like I didn't know well or didn't even know at all were just so there for me. And
yep.
It was very eye-opening, because when you never ever ask for help, I think there's a part of you that thinks like, if I did ask for help, it probably wouldn't be there.
It's amazing how great people are when you need them, you know. It's
yeah.
People don't talk about it enough, and people don't realize like celebrate it enough, but like when you ask for help, so many people reached out to me when I stopped drinking.
Mm-hmm.
People I'd never met, and then I don't know if it was the same situation with you, but like every time we'd be out, I'd be out and I'd see them at comedy shows or around, these people that I didn't know, like maybe met twice, would come and check in. Hey,
yeah.
Doing all right? Doing everything okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that, and just making, knowing that people were caring about you and actually like gave a shit, made me go, okay, this is okay.
It makes a big difference. And what a lot of people had said to me, a lot of the people who helped, especially people who I didn't know, had said that they were happy to do it because someone had done something for them.
Yeah.
And realizing how many people were paying it forward. acts of kindness that they had gotten from other people before.
Yeah, and like, and I would imagine now, if anyone was in a similar situation, you'd probably be the first.
Absolutely.
To do whatever you could, because you relate to that. And that's one of the greatest things that I found with my own thing, is the amount of people that have also had the same struggles come to me and help on it. And then you find this like weird sort of community of people going through the same stuff, but awesome people who end up, even because of all the worst case scenario things that you're in, you end up being friends with people because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like meeting better people because of it is such a, I never even thought that like that thing, that sort of such a thing existed, right?
And you don't realize that whatever problem it is that you're struggling with, how common it is until you become kind of public with it. Like, I'm sure that you didn't realize how many people were struggling with that or were actively thinking about sobriety until you quit drinking. And for me, it was, I left this relationship and then so many people came to me with their own stories.
Yeah. And that's it's one of those things where when you're in it, you think that it's only you that it's happening to, and that there's no support thing. So that, I mean, that's why one of the things why I'm so public with my own like sobriety and getting help and stuff, because I honestly didn't know that that like you could get help and people were willing to do that and you could change your life, and it's quite an amazing thing. But so, I mean, so you go out with that and your life's, you get nowhere to live.
Mm-hmm.
You have, you're kind of still at your job,
mm-hmm.
but you kind of want to leave. You're taking a break from stand-up because the thought of even being on stage, and it was just kind of ironic because sometimes people are like, will go on stage when their life's an absolute mess,
mm-hmm.
because that's the only way that they can sort of deal with it, because that's the only way they can sort of put it, piece it together. But it wasn't like that with you?
No, for me it was that I felt like if I wasn't talking about what was actually happening, then everything that I was saying was irrelevant, because none of, like, I don't know, talking about, like, using an app to learn Russian, like in these funny sentences it gives me or whatever jokes I'm telling. I'm like, none of this matters. None of this is what's actually going on.
Mm.
It's all irrelevant. But then trying to talk about what was actually going on, like the tragedy plus time equals comedy thing. The time is important.
Mm.
And not enough time had passed. Yeah. So I had maybe one set after that was like the first set that I did after all of this went down, that the set went very well. I talked about this the whole time, and it went very well. But after that, it wasn't going to become my new act or anything like that. And also I was in a place where I was not feeling up to handling the potential rejection of a room full of people.
Yeah.
That like you have to make yourself really vulnerable in stand up, even if you're not talking about like technically vulnerable things, you're still in a very vulnerable position. And I was in such a fragile place. I was not.
Yeah. So that's like, even that's gotta be like another punch to the face. Cause it's almost like the one thing that you love doing is now being stripped away from you too.
Mm-hmm.
So now for your whole life's a mess, the one thing that keeps you sane, you can't do, because you can't allow yourself to be up there and be rejected and be in run role. So what do you do? So we're going to get to the sort of mindfulness thing. So you're, you're sitting there, you're having all these thoughts and probably going out your mind, but you're getting to a point where you're like, okay, well, I can't allow my life to look like this anymore, so I just have to accept it, internalize it, not distract myself from it, and try and move forward and make some changes. Is that where you kind of got to? How long did it take you to sort of get to that point? Was it immediate? Did you kind of, was it a slow, was there a slow realization at the end of all this that that's kind of where you had to do it anyway, or did you not know at the time? But looking back, maybe.
I think that it became really clear to me when things got really messy and bad that as much as it isn't my fault and wasn't my fault, that clearly I am doing something that is inviting this kind of chaos into my life, and I need to change that. So it was pretty much immediately, it was like, okay, let's start chipping away at things and trying to rewire my brain.
Right.
So the mindfulness thing came in after a few months.
Did you try anything else before that? Was there any other things you tried to do to try and like sort of?
Yeah, well, I went back to therapy for one thing, which was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And really just started looking at myself and looking at the past in a different way. And the best way that I can describe it is I didn't immediately try to change behaviors. I just became curious about them.
Okay, interesting, interesting.
Just
so,
looking at yourself and your own thoughts and patterns and behavior with a sense of curiosity of, oh, I do this.
Mm.
I've never really paid attention to the fact that I do this before. That's interesting. And just kind of exploring.
So I always date this kind of person. Mm-hmm. I'm like this in a job or, you know, that.
Yes.
So, and then, and it's interesting how those things suddenly come to your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just sitting there going like, why is this? And was that therapy that got you there, do you think?
Some of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were a couple of like big moments in like the months after everything that were very eye-opening. The one that comes to my mind, I might have told you about this off mic before, but when I was making tea my first night in my new apartment, and I was on the phone with my best friend, and I'm making tea, I would boil water in the kettle, it's my first night finally not sleeping on this friend's couch, and I go to pour the water out of the kettle and the lid fell off of the kettle and the steam came out of the kettle and burnt my hand.
Oh.
And it burnt me pretty bad. I had blisters all over my hand for quite a long time afterwards. And I didn't make a sound. I'm on the phone with my friend. Didn't make a sound. Didn't throw the kettle as soon as it burnt me because that would make noise, I suppose. Carried it, the kettle while it was burning me over to the sink where I could safely put it down, and then quietly ran my hand under cold water. The whole time I'm listening to my friend, we're having a conversation. I had a second degree burn on my hand and I didn't even react to it. And I was like, it became so painful that eventually I was like, I'm really sorry. I think I have to get off the phone. I burnt my hand. And it hurts a lot. And my friend said, like, when did you burn your hand? When did that happen? I was like, oh, well, we were talking. And that was something that I was like, I got to be curious about this. I was like, that's pretty messed up that I just like let that steam burn my hand and didn't say.
You don't want to make a fuss.
Didn't make a fuss. That it became clear to me, oh, I was concerned that I would worry the person on the phone with me.
Yeah, that's definitely a moment because that's a very worrying
right
thing to allow yourself.
Yes.
But, and maybe in hindsight, when you look back at that, like, is that something that you're like, I'm glad that happened?
100%. Yeah. It crystallized everything. Yeah. I was like, all of my behavior pretty much can be boiled down into just that moment.
Boiled down,
no, yes,
steamed
down, no,
yeah.
No pun intended, boiled.
So as far as, so you get to the mindfulness now, I know a little, is it your sister had
mm-hmm.
had similar, had done the course.
Yes.
Previously and thought that this might be something that you might be interested in. So can you tell me a little bit about like what the course was and, like why, like your sister sort of pointed you towards it. What
mm-hmm.
was there any sort of benefit that she found for herself or anything
yep.
like that?
Well, me and my sister both suffer from chronic illnesses.
Mm.
She has chronic fatigue syndrome and I have fibromyalgia. And so she had done this mindfulness class. It's called MBSR. It's a mindfulness-based stress reduction. And it's a class that you get referred to by your doctor.
Right.
So it's for people with medical issues, but that would also include anxiety. So yeah. If you were suffering from panic attacks and things like that, you could have your doctor refer you to this class.
Would it be is it mostly, so, I mean, I guess that you and your sister have autoimmune disease. So it's mm-hmm. like for people that are experiencing pain.
Yeah.
Is that what
how
to manage?
Any kind of really strong, overwhelming, unpleasant sensation, basically.
Right.
So there were other people in the class with fibromyalgia. There were people with Parkinson's. People with anxiety disorders, people who had
and that's people
lost
from
their spouse.
Is that people from all walks of life, or did you find it was a particular type of person?
It was pretty diverse. Really. I was probably the youngest person in the class. There were a lot of older people.
Right. And, how had it managed this class? Your sister recommended it. What? Mm-hmm. How did she find any benefit from it right away?
She said this was her health took a turn a few years ago and made it very difficult for her to do things. She was on bed rest for quite a long time, but prior to that, she had been really taking herself on as a project, kind of like I did a few months ago. And was trying everything that had ever been recommended, basically. And one of the things that she tried was this class. And she said that it had more of a benefit than almost anything else that she had tried.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that she had gone into it with a kind of skeptical mind.
Yeah.
Thinking like, oh, okay, I'll just go and like sit and be quiet for an hour.
Well, this is the thing that I've been thinking about. And I read a lot about meditation, mindfulness. It seems to be sort of the popular thing these days. There's a lot of books about it, and I think people are skeptical. I'm a little skeptical sometimes. It's like, what, you just sit and you breathe and you just think about your thoughts and just be okay with them? Thanks doctor, that'll solve all my problems, just breathing. Why am I breathing? Have I been breathing wrong my whole life? You know what I mean? Like, that's ridiculous. But then you get back to this, like, oh, when you look at anyone who's ever gone through suffering or anyone's been successful, it's like meditation is always part of their mm-hmm. daily routine. And when they're not doing it, things get back to the way they might have been before, and then they go back to it, and then things are good again. And it seems like such an easy thing to do, sit and meditate, breathe mm-hmm. for even 10 minutes a day. But it's a hard thing to just put into your daily routine, which is ridiculous because we breathe all the time.
Well, I think like it's difficult for people to carve out chunks of their day to do anything every day. So even something like meditation where you could do it for 10 minutes, it's still somehow difficult to get yourself to just start doing that. What I started doing was just using small mindfulness-based kind of tools through the day or through difficult periods.
And this was after the course?
This was even before the course. Okay. There were a couple of these things that I was already doing. Like if I was finding myself being really anxious or panicked, I would just remind myself of what I was currently doing. So I'm freaking out about whatever, thoughts about the future, thoughts about the past, worries. And then I would bring myself back to reality and tell myself, like, you're just sitting on a couch.
Yeah.
You're only sitting on a couch. Nothing else is happening right now. You're just sitting on this couch.
It's insane that most people in the world, their medical conditions, a lot of it is stress. Mm-hmm. And stress is caused by stuff that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And that's insane.
Exactly.
You know, like, you're literally making yourself ill, thinking about something that doesn't exist in the current time that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what's wrong with so many people. That's what causes so much depression, anxiety, illnesses, having to take you have to take time off work because of you made yourself sick because of you thought about something that may or may not happen. It's a real thing, but it sounds hilarious when you say it out loud like that. But like for me, I had a panic attack in the movies recently where I was just like, I have to go home, and then there was no reason. And it's Yeah, the distraction tool that you're saying is good. It's just like, oh, I'm just on a couch.
Yeah, it's just paying attention to where you physically are at this moment.
Yeah.
Or like paying attention to like, how does it feel to sit on this chair? Like, what does the back of your legs feel like on the chair?
Yeah.
What do your feet feel like on the floor? Just focusing on where your physical body is right now.
And it's very hard to even think about that when you're having a panic attack, because you're just thinking that everything else is more important.
I think like the big thing about like mindfulness is the lack of judgment that you put on whatever it is that you are feeling. So you're paying attention to what you're doing it on purpose, and you're doing it without judgment. So a feeling isn't pleasant or unpleasant. It just is the way that it is, which is why I think, or part of why this kind of technique is so helpful for people with chronic pain, because it allows you to look at the pain through a lens that you had never considered.
Right.
But I have found it especially helpful for feelings of anxiety.
Okay.
And even just labeling those feelings as you're having them. Yeah. Being able to recognize, instead of whatever thought spiral you're on, to just tell yourself, I am experiencing anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the experience of having anxiety.
Okay. Yeah. And that's,
with no judgment of it being good or bad to have it.
Yeah. So that was, tell me about this class. I remember you telling me the first class had something to do with a raisin, which
yeah,
I think I want to hear a bit more about.
In the first class, we did do a raisin meditation, which sounds really silly, and it would be very easy for me to make fun of it. I actually did find it very relaxing.
Yeah.
And I felt really good after that class.
So can you describe that, what you did?
So we had to take a little box of raisins.
Like sun-kissed?
Yeah, yeah. And put like 5 in your hand, and then just spend a lot of time looking at them really carefully. We didn't call them raisins either. We called them objects, so that you don't have any preconceived judgments or anything about your harsh opinions about raisins. But yeah, we looked at them. What do they all look like? And then like, how do they feel in your hand? And then we picked our favorite one and put the others down. And then we kind of spent some time putting it from one hand to the other to see, like, does it feel different in each hand? Does it feel lighter or heavier, depending on what hand we put it in? And then feeling it with your fingers, smelling it, listening to it.
Listening.
We put it up to our ears and we listened to it and, like, squished it and stuff to see if it made a sound. And then, like, putting it against your lips but not in your mouth. And then finally putting it in your mouth and holding it between your teeth but not biting it.
Wow, it's very sensual. Very sensual raisin.
Very sensual raisin eating.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like an exercise in mindful eating and raisin meditation, apparently is a thing.
Really?
Specifically a raisin.
So when you were doing it, did you feel silly?
I let myself let go of the feeling of.
See, I would just be like, "This is a raisin. I want to eat it. This is fucking stupid." But that's me. But like, so you let yourself go? But like, when you were doing it, were you like, "Yeah, this makes sense. This is like was it calming?"
It was. It was very calming.
Yeah.
Well, like, it was so much more attention than I normally pay to anything.
Yeah, so that's the point is, like,
yeah.
So you're like, okay, you're
just this is happening right now.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at this raisin.
Yeah, and that's
it's the I'm just sitting on a couch thing, but expanded.
Yeah, and very because we do that all the time. We're not paying attention to what we're doing. We're paying attention to things that are either have happened or are in the future that we're not sure about, and we spend so much time there that we're not just paying attention to the raisin, I guess.
Even just if you look at just eating.
Yeah.
How much of your food do you actually pay attention to?
Yeah.
How many bags of chips have just completely disappeared without you even really having noticed that you ate them?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's, I've read about a lot of sort of monks and stuff when they're eating.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other distractions. It's just them, the food.
Yeah.
Just paying attention to to what they're actually. Now, I don't think, I can't even remember a time I've done that. I don't think I could. It's very, like, or you chew your food like 40 times.
Yep.
You're trying to chew your food 40 times. It's crazy. Your food would be cold by the time. I can't, I barely swallow. So, yeah, that's, I mean, that's a very interesting point. It's like that we're talking again with the whole Leonard thing. Like, he must be great with raisins, I guess. But just that, we just, I mean, that's one thing I really struggle with, is just staying present to what we're doing. Even if we're, even as we're talking now, I'm thinking of something else. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to stay focused on this, but it's very hard when your brain is just a crazy mess. And we, so you did that, how long was that course you were doing? Six?
I did it for 5 weeks. And then you can continue and do it for another 5 weeks.
Right. And how do you feel after doing that course? You, are you more aware of being attentive to yourself in the present moment now?
I think yes. I think yes, very much. And I think that it came at exactly the right time. That if I had taken that class even a little bit earlier, that I wouldn't have been ready to absorb things yet. And that it has kind of like nicely closed up a period of time for me. Not saying that like, oh, I'm done or like anything like that, but I just mean like I feel like I'm moving on into a next chapter of self-growth.
You're sort of better equipped to deal with heavy things in your life.
New tools, and that I have successfully done some rewiring of myself, and the having some curiosity about my own behavior has helped me adjust things already.
And do you feel like a different version of yourself, or do you feel more like the true version of yourself, if that makes sense?
I think I feel a little more like what's been underneath.
Right.
If that makes sense.
The Tracy that's lived in you, that's screaming to get out but never has had the capacity to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm feeling, like a sense of release.
Right. That's amazing, because this is the something that, again, I'm dealing with. And also, like, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this, I hear so many people. How many people we know that are anxious, have panic attacks? We hang out with comics all the time, so it's just the same same things. But I feel like I feel like this kind of conversation is really interesting, because there is there's ways out of your thinking, there's ways out of your behavior, there's ways out of your habit. You just have to pay attention. You have to just want to make the change and just slow down a little bit and just put a little effort in and try and, like, I think, like, I mean, personally, I've never done any inner work, really. I just don't think so. You know, it's all exterior and people pleasing and what other people are doing. But, like, to actually think about the inside of you and who you are, which is so important, because this is you, you know, and it's like what you have on your inside is what you're giving out to the outside. So it's, but it's amazing that I spent most of my life doing it. You probably spent most of your life not doing it. So many people, I'm guessing a high percentage of people, don't do that work.
Yeah.
Because you know that, like, when you talk to people about stuff like meditation, mindfulness, yoga, eating healthy, all that kind of exercise, people are like, yeah, fucking hippie man, or whatever. People are very defensive about it. But you're living proof that this is a thing that can get you to the next place. Because would you, I mean, it's hard to say in hindsight, but like, if you hadn't done that kind of work, do you feel like you would just keep going in the same, repeat the same patterns of?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you'd be like, you maybe split up with a person, and maybe next couple months later you're in a similar situation, and you still don't, because you don't know how to equip with it, and, or how to be aware of the situation happening. For me, when I stopped drinking, I stopped hanging out with toxic people, and now when I see toxic people, they're not even in my life. And when they're around, I just get away from them. And that's because I put in the effort to figure that out. But before, they would just, I wouldn't have to do anything, they would just be there.
Yeah.
They just turn up. But it's amazing. I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, when I stopped drinking as well, is so many amazing, wonderful people came into my life because, not because I was out there physically trying desperately to find these people, but just because I was doing the internal work, somehow that goes out into the universe, and then the universe just responds by bringing these people in. Did you find the same experience?
I think it was like a shifting of my own attention. That because I had been so bad at comforting myself and so desperate for distractions of any kind, that like high drama, toxic people are a very excellent distraction.
Yes.
They consume so much of your time and will not give you room to be sitting on your own thinking about your unpleasant thoughts, right? Like, you will not have time.
Because you're busy thinking of the drama.
Because you're busy thinking of the drama and, and taking care of that person and managing their emotions and thinking about their life and their inner state instead of thinking about your own.
Yeah.
So I think that once I was more willing to really sit with myself, that it was very easy for me to be like, oh, no. If I'm sitting with myself, then I don't have room for any of these people and any of their drama. And that I was much more tuned in to the people in my life who are refueling in some way.
Yeah, and this is one of the things I struggled with as well. I still do, is like taking time for yourself to do certain things like this seems selfish because of how I used to be. And like, people would say you're selfish for spending time on your own. So you feel guilty or shame about trying to do sort of inner work or not pleasing someone and being, saying no to people. But do you find it easier now to sort of just be like, I need this time for myself. I know what I need, what I don't need, and saying no to things and just, you know, being a bit more aware of what you need as a person?
Yes. Definitely. Yeah. And that's something that I had never been good at before.
Yeah.
And selfish in particular, like, that word has always been very heavy for me and has been something that, like, when I have toxic people in my life, they know that that's a button for me and they'll push it often.
Yes.
So anytime I do try to assert myself or take my own space, it's, oh, you're selfish.
Yeah.
Because they know that that hurts.
Yeah. And because you know that you'll go, oh, yeah, I'm being selfish.
Yeah.
So I'll just attend to your every need.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a very common thing. It's, I think a lot of people deal with toxic people and people pleasing and not doing a lot of internal work. And it really is a shame because there's so many, you see it now when I see people now, I'm like, I know they're like real good people, but they just don't see it in themselves and they don't know how to sort of take time for themselves and do a little self-reflection and get away from people. But you can see it in them and you can see the pain in them.
Yeah.
And this is like the one reason why I'm talking to people like you and doing stuff for myself, because I want people to know that it's okay to do these kind of things. And
yeah, and like, to be honest, like, you don't have to buy into all of this stuff immediately.
No.
Right? Like, if you're trying to do meditation or mindfulness stuff or whatever it is, and you feel like you're kind of a dork doing it and that it's sort of like lame or uncool, that's fine. You can feel like that for a while. Just do it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, if you feel like...
You can feel like a dork and do it. And like, a lot of that stuff does feel very unnatural at first, especially stuff like I've spent the last, I would say, probably 5 or 6 years really working on my thoughts and inner monologue and how I talk to myself and having a curiosity about that. And that's made a huge difference, probably bigger than anything that I've ever done in my life, is just changing the way that I talk to myself. And at first, when you're saying nice things to yourself in your head, you feel so stupid and it feels so unnatural. Like, I would do it to myself like before shows and things like that. If I had a show and I was nervous, instead of playing, oh, I'm so nervous. Oh, this isn't going to go well. Oh, I really hope that this works. Oh, this person's here. I hope they like me. Instead of playing that stuff on a loop, I would just tell myself over and over, like, you're really good at this. You belong here. Yeah. Like things like that.
Yeah.
And it feels so stupid.
It sounds stupid though. I could imagine saying that to myself.
It's ridiculous.
But it works.
Yeah.
It's funny how like being kind to yourself is one of your last priorities.
Yes.
It's crazy. You know, like, but you find that like, this is a problem I have as well, is negative self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm a piece of shit. That's not worth anything. That's number one. Just flipping that. And I guess, I mean, maybe you've done that too in sort of therapy. It's like, instead of being like, hey, I'm no good at this, I'm like, hey, well, I'm learning to get better. Just flipping it to the positive. And that takes a requirement of patience and kindness to yourself. But do you find now that most of your thoughts are mainly positive, or if they come in negative, are you able to flip them quickly without dwelling on the negative?
Compared to how I was a few years ago, astronomical difference.
Mm.
Like humongous difference. Yeah. And I really honestly believe that that is the best place for anybody to start in any kind of like trying to move past feelings of depression or anxiety or like self-loathing. It's all about how you talk to yourself in your head. And what I was saying earlier about curiosity, that's the way to approach that stuff at the beginning, is not to try and redirect the thoughts immediately when you catch yourself saying negative things to yourself in your head or criticizing yourself. Don't change the dialogue right away. Just spend like maybe a few weeks to a month just paying attention.
Yeah.
Just sort of keeping a soft tally of how much of your thoughts are you shit-talking yourself, because you will be so surprised. It is so much of what you're thinking all the time that you're just constantly criticizing yourself and constantly putting yourself down. So even if you can only ultimately redirect 20 to 30% of those thoughts, makes a humongous difference.
Slowly it'll build, right?
Slowly.
And also to jump on your point as well, is like allowing yourself to fail whilst doing it, because you're not, if you spent your whole life negative talking, you're not just going to flip it in a day.
No.
But you're going to fuck up some days, and you just got to be like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I failed. I'm just going to keep doing it. And it's slowly, slowly, you know, and here's another thing. It's like, you got to treat yourself. Like, I think this to myself, and it's very hard. It's like, would the things that I say to myself, would I say that to my friend?
Exactly. Be and your own best friend.
The answer is always no. You would never say anything.
Exactly.
You would never say anything as mean to your own best friend.
Just reframing it like that really puts it into perspective how messed up it is that you talk that way to yourself.
Yeah. Why can you be so hard on yourself, but yet everyone that you love and want in your life, you would never ever even dare. And how would they react to it as well?
Mm-hmm.
If you were to say the things that you said to your friend, they would be like, hey, that's really mean. I thought we were friends. Why would you do that? Mm-hmm. And then he probably wouldn't talk to you for a while. Yeah. So how do you do that to yourself?
And like, we only get to be one person, right? You only get to live inside of one body and one mind.
Yeah.
So why not spend most of your energy making it a nice place to live?
Exactly. Well, can we talk, we're coming up to the end of there, but like, can we talk quickly about your show that you do? Because I think that's very important with all the stuff that we're talking about. Tracy has a show monthly at Comedy Bar. It's the third Sunday of every month at 8 o'clock. Comedy Bar in Toronto, Bloor Street West. It's called Love Is Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the show? I've been on the show. It's awesome. And I think if you like comedy, and you also like, if you're feeling like you want something positive and just a good feeling, and you're having a bit of a hard day, this is the show to check out. It's really awesome. But if you can describe what the show is a little bit about.
This is a show concept that I came up with because of all of that stuff with positive self-talk and me kind of working through my own issues using positive psychology and signs of happiness kind of stuff. I'm a very logical person, despite my, like, you would think that I'd be a more emotionally driven person than I am, but I'm very brain forward. So that's what I respond to. And I think that that's what gets in the way for a lot of people with this kind of stuff. If you're struggling with depression or anxiety, that, it's a brain thing getting in the way. So this show is kind of designed to rewire everybody's brains. So I host it with my co-host Cassie Baratis, who's an extremely talented and wonderful improviser. And basically what we do is we have stand-ups on the show who we give what we call happiness assignments to, which are basically just little projects that they have to do for a couple of days leading up to the show that are things that are supposed to boost your happiness levels. So we have them do this assignment before the show happens. And then at the show, we bring them up and interview them and ask them questions about how it went.
So, for example, can
you
give an example of something like that that happened?
We've done simple ones like write a gratitude list. Last month, we had write a thank you letter to yourself.
Yeah. And those are difficult things to do.
Yeah.
Because you probably have never even thought about that. Mm-hmm. And then when you do it, because I've been on the show and I've had to do it, it's very hard, but I found that after you did it, you were like, oh, this is great.
It feels good.
Yeah, it feels great.
I would say most of the assignments that we give out are based on being honest about your feelings with other people in your life.
Yeah.
That most of them are just telling other people with words that you appreciate them and why.
And not enough people do that either.
No, people are terrified of admitting that they care about anything. So admitting to somebody that you care about them is very scary.
But this is the thing about your show that I found pretty wonderful, because I've seen a bunch of them, is the positive feedback from the assessments when, say, someone's had to go tell their parents that they love them, or talk to their sister about something, or write a letter to themselves. Every time it's had, they've always been like, this was amazing. It really helped the relationship with someone.
Mm-hmm.
It's opened up communication. I really found this out about myself. I don't think there's been anything bad that's ever happened, has it?
No. You know, no. What I mean? It's weird how much it's working.
Yeah.
And putting things out there. And how many stories I've gotten from comics even afterwards saying that they gave their assignment out to a friend because they were going through a rough time.
Yeah.
And that it improved that. So that's kind of what we're trying to do, is have this sort of ripple effect of positivity, especially through the comedy community, because there's so much negativity.
Yeah.
And like for the audiences, it's just, this time is really hard.
Yeah.
Like just in life and in the world, it's just hard to be a person right now.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know what we say, the show is like, we're all going to fall apart all the time. And this is just trying to give you more tools to put yourself back together.
Well, this is the thing. I want to like get your thoughts wrap this sort of up. But like, there's a lot going on in the world. It's too much.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, we're just inundated with just the next thing and the next thing and the next thing.
Yeah.
And you're just like, and you start freaking out about stuff that, you know, it's not even in your wheelhouse. And I think the one thing that this conversation and the meditation and yoga things and what I've learned is like, you can only do so much about all these things. And I think the number one thing, if you're like, what can I do to make myself feel better in this world? What can I do to help all the stuff that's going on and all the people that are suffering or the people around you? It's like, you can't do too much. Well, the first thing you got to do is look inward. Are you okay? Can I make myself better? Do I feel good? What can I do to do that? Just take the steps and love yourself. And then once that comes out, that goes out to everyone. And if that goes out to one person, then they might bring, you know, so just building that positivity and putting it out there. And that's all you can really do. I don't think you can really be like, oh, well, Donald Trump. It's like you can't do anything with Donald Trump. But what you can do is not feel the hate.
Yeah.
You know, or stuff, or you can, you know, you just put out better, you know, just make yourself better, and then the people around you will feel better, and the people around them will feel better,
mm-hmm.
and that's essentially what you hope will happen.
Yes.
But I think if everyone did that, then logistically everyone should feel amazing, because
and just happy people are less shitty to each other.
Yeah.
Right? If you cultivate happiness, like happy people aren't cutting other people off in traffic.
No. When you last time you were really fucking angry, you know, like, and if you were like, or just like pissed off for no reason, like, mm-hmm. I mean, like, I mean, there's things in life that you get angry about, yeah. but like, I mean, just like,
but like a no reason.
How often do you just wake up and just be like, fuck, you know, fuck everything mm-hmm. for no reason? It doesn't happen anymore, does it?
No, and it used to.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And even when it does now, I bet you can turn it around pretty
yeah,
quick.
Yeah, no, at least I'm more observant of it. And if I feel a mood like that, I'm like, oh, that's off.
Yeah.
that's not standard. But you can't get there until you realize that, like, you aren't the thoughts that you're having. You are the thing observing the thoughts.
So if we got, like, a couple minutes left. I just want to get your thoughts on, like, so if anyone out there is listening and being like, well, I'm stuck in this situation. I'm not happy. I'm depressed. I don't know what to do. I don't think I can change anything. I'm never going to be happy. Can you sum up in a couple of minutes? Like, can you give me any advice or where to start or anything like that? Or just a positive sort of like affirmation for that?
Absolutely. Pay attention to your thoughts. Pay attention to the way that you're talking to yourself. Be nicer to yourself, even if it feels like you're lying at first.
Even make it till you make it.
Exactly. Even if it feels like the things that you're saying to yourself aren't true and the real truth is that I'm really like this and I'm shitty and blah, blah, blah. Even if it feels wrong, if it feels like it doesn't fit, do it anyway.
Yeah.
Just think nice things to yourself. It sounds so stupid and so easy. It actually is totally what works.
Yeah.
And like this would be a whole other podcast worth of stuff, but like that got me out of like the darkest periods of my life is just rearranging my thoughts and starting to pay attention to how much I was putting myself down. The world will tear you apart enough without you doing it to yourself all of the time.
Yeah. That's some solid advice. And yeah. And I would say just another thing is if your life is in a weird place where you don't think you can get out or you're struggling, reach out to someone.
Yes.
People are awesome. People mm-hmm. are, for the most part, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Did you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, don't feel you're ever stuck in anything.
And, like, we're with the internet. Like, even if you are really, truly alone and you don't have anybody in your life, friends who you can turn to, we are connected to the entire world right now. There is some corner of the world that really cares about you and is there to help.
Yeah, and well, that's, I think, a good place to leave it. And and talking of internet, please tune in to the podcast next week, I guess, if you need another place to hear a friendly voice. Thank you, Tracy, for coming in and sharing all your stuff. This is awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Goodbye.